Welcome to Packet Protector, a new podcast at the intersection of security and networking from The Packet Pushers. I'm Jennifer JJ Manella, and I'm here with Packet Pushers' own Drew Conry Murray, which I'm tired of saying, so I'm just going to call you the Drew from now on.
That's fair.
Each week here, we're going to be discussing security topics, trends, and a couple of news headlines. Plus, we're going to be providing you technical and strategic information you can put to work. Whether security is your full-time job or just one of your responsibilities, Packet Protector is for you. And as always, we love to hear from you. So hop over to packetpushers.net/FU, probably for follow-up, but who knows? And you can send us a note there anytime. And remember, we are pre-recording a few of these first few episodes. This is one of the pre-recorded ones. We're not ignoring you. We will get on a nice cadence once we're getting your feedback and rolling with that weekly.
FU is officially for follow-up, but our audience is welcome to interpret it as they like.
I will.
Speaking of the other giggle you hear in the background there, we have a guest with us this week, Mr. Kevin Johnson, as seen at DEF CON, Black Hat, ShmooCon, and other notable cybersecurity conferences. I feel like I had to do it in the voice. I've known Kevin for many years. He's a founder and CEO of Secure Ideas. And if you're not familiar with them, it's a highly reputable security assessment and pen testing firm based out of Florida. He has created and taught a lot of the SANS courses on pen testing. And most recently, at the end of last year, Kevin, you were elected as OWASP Board of Directors. So congratulations, sir, on that one.
Thank you.
A couple of personal facts, just because I like you guys listening to get to know who we're talking to here. If you follow him on social media, you know he's a huge Star Wars fan, and you can't see him right now, but there is a giant Wookiee behind him. So maybe one day we'll bring Kevin back with the video and you can see Chewbacca staring creepily in the corner behind him.
Chewbacca is really shoulder surfing there. It is.
Yes. Yeah. He is 7'5" when I wear him.
And the wearing him. So you and I've had Rich and some of you guys are members of the 501st Legion.
Yes. We are a costuming group that builds screen accurate Star Wars costumes and then wear them to raise money for charity or visit kids in hospitals and stuff like that. Chewie is fun. When you walk into the hospital room of a kid and they just light up, their family lights up. It's worth every bit of effort it took to make him. So, yeah.
Oh, and that is a lot of fur.
26 pounds of hair extensions.
Oh my God.
Which gets you a very odd look at Sally Beauty Supplies when you walk in and say, I need 26 pounds of hair extensions in these four colors.
As a woman, I'm going to say that must also be a very expensive costume.
It is not my most expensive.
No. Okay. Well,
Chewie was only about $2,000.
Okay, not bad. All right, guys. Well, today we're going to be diving into the magical and mystical world of technical security assessments and pen testing. But before we do that, we have a couple of news headlines. Before we were recording, we were having a little bit of a good giggle over some of the stuff from CISA in the past day or two. So the unprecedented headline of CISA setting a 48-hour deadline to remove Ivanti products.
Yeah, so CISA, which is the cybersecurity agency for the U.S. federal government, there are significant vulnerabilities that have been detected in these Ivanti, I think, VPN products, and there are active exploits, and CISA has taken the step of saying, not just mitigate them or patch them, but in the next 48 hours, and we're recording this on February 2nd for context, they need to be unplugged from your network.
Yeah, by midnight tonight.
And my understanding is that this is the first time CISA has frankly, just come out and said, unplug it. It's so bad, you just need to unplug it.
I think that is correct. I know that they have said to unplug other things. Barracuda was an example of that.
Through one of the circles of the Barracuda vulnerabilities, I think at some point they just threw their hands in the air and said, take it off the network.
Forget this, unplug it. But every other time I can recall, they would say something like, we recommend you unplug it, but if you can't, you can do this or this or this to like kind of alleviate the problem. The one that gets me, Jay Beal, who I used to work for and is awesome, he actually tweeted out this morning that, you know, we all talk about the unplugging, but if you look at the next steps that they say to do, like, hey, reboot the machine 47 times, change your password twice. The first one was an exaggeration. The second one was not. Which I do like the idea. Tell people, change your password, do this stuff, now change it again. Wait, why? Like, wait a minute. Just the sheer number of things that they're telling agencies to do is mind-boggling to me. And then what do they have until Monday the 5th to tell CISA? They're supposed to spend the weekend looking to see if attackers have gotten in. And they have until Monday the 5th to tell CISA that they've done it and what they found and everything. This is not going to be a fun weekend for a large number of government agencies.
No. And their contractors, probably.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Their contractors.
And speaking of, because I was sitting here just thinking with Drew, like, Avanti, Avanti, Avanti. You know, I've spent probably the better part of 20 years deploying VPN products, and that's right. Not one I was immediately familiar with until we started digging in the portfolio. And we realized Avanti is a portfolio company that has just gobbled up a lot of names you guys might recognize from 20 plus years ago, like Landesk and Shavlik. So MobileIron, probably a newer one, Lumention Security, and then Pulse Secure. So Pulse spun off a portfolio of things from Juniper Networks, who had acquired them, I think, from Drew, was it?
It was originally developed by NeoTerrace, NetScreen bought NeoTerrace, then Juniper bought NetScreen, and then Juniper spun it out to a private equity firm, and then Avanti picked it up from the private equity firm.
Yeah.
And this is over decades, like literally decades.
And I think this last exchange was 2020-ish, so a few years ago. I'm not familiar enough with Avanti and what they do with their portfolio to know how much they continue developing and securing it. But I'm guessing probably based on the recent news, it's not a lot of R&D going into that product.
I think we can at least say not enough.
Yeah, so this is what jumped out at me. So right now we're talking about an active exploit against their VPN portfolio. But Avanti also came into the news a couple of years ago because of exploits being executed against their VPN portfolio. So this is not the first time that Avanti has been through this, even on the same platform. And it's also, researchers saying this looks like nation state activity, probably China. Same thing from the 2 years ago when this happened before. So again, Avanti not taking the learnings it should have gotten from the first time around it went through this. So yeah, it doesn't give me a lot of confidence in the attention they're paying to the code quality of these products in their portfolio.
Look, I love laughing at other people's pain just because I like laughing at my own pain. I'm a penetration tester. My job is to come in and tell you your baby's ugly. This is so typical of what we see with organizations that I'm always hesitant to say, and Drew, I'm going to quote you, right? Like you said, you know, they didn't learn it based on their last go around. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think, and this is something I'm actually keynoting ShowmeCon in April, and my talk at ShowmeCon is actually driven by this idea. I think security has failed. InfoSec has failed these people. And I'm not saying that they did enough and we didn't give them enough stuff and everything else like that. I am concerned that what we have done over time, and we see it in things like this, is that we have made security so complicated. We have preached at them so much without actually understanding what they do and what their business is and what their roles are and their goals are, is that we've made it to the point where developers and companies and what have you have gotten to just say, you know what, we can't accomplish everything you're telling us we have to do, so we're just going to focus on making money. And we can't do it. You're telling us we can't secure things. You're telling us that no matter what we do, now I'm not saying this is true. I'm saying this is what I hear from people. You're telling me security is impossible to breach, so why should I bother? And then I'll just accept the fact that once every 4 or 5 years, I have a major breach and CISA tells you to unplug my devices. And then you know as well as I do that here's what's going to happen with Avanti. Either 6 months is going to go by and people are going to continue to buy their stuff and roll their stuff out, or you're going to see them rebrand or be bought by the next company. And just like Pulse had tons of problems when Juniper had it, right? And we'll just see this cycle continue over and over again. And it's our damn fault, which bothers me.
I guess I agree a little bit on that. I think your typical organization whose primary reason for existence isn't security, it's to sell you something, make something, whatever. Yes, security is way too complicated for them to get right because they have to get it right every time and the attacker only has to get it right once. If you are a security vendor, that is your reason for existing. And
no, it's not.
It is. Well, it's selling a product.
Right. No company's purpose is to be secure. Their purpose is to provide what they sell. And Avanti's job is to provide, we'll narrow this down to VPNs, right? Mm-hmm. Their goal is to sell as many VPNs as possible.
Yes.
Period. Their goal is not to have the most secure VPN. Because you know as well as I do that if they had the most secure VPN, people wouldn't use it.
Because it would be too complicated to use yourself?
Right. Yeah. So their job is to balance all of this stuff, release a product that is good enough And again, please don't take this as Kevin's. I can just see the quotes now. Kevin says, forget security. We don't need it. That's not what I'm saying. Right? But they aren't going to make more money by being more secure.
But Kevin, is good enough? Are we saying that, oh, you have to unplug your shit from the network, physically unplug it? And that, to me, no, as a security company, no, that is not good enough.
I totally agree. But here's what happened, right? They thought they were good enough, and then it was proven wrong.
Frankly, I don't think a portfolio company like this cares. I don't think that's their objective, which is sad. And maybe that's not the kind of organization we need to be buying our security products from, especially if you're a federal agency.
No, I totally agree. Their goal is not to have the most secure product, and that's bad. And as a VPN vendor, I would like to hold them to a higher standard, right? This goes back to, which we talked about earlier, you know, Jen Easterly said in a recent presentation, conversation, she was quoted as saying that one of the reasons we have these problems is because developers aren't held liable. And mm-hmm. I believe that what she means is the companies who build the products aren't held liable. The quote implies that it's individual developers, which I think is a horrible idea. But I do think that until people start not buying crap products, we're going to continue to have these issues. You've gone through procurement before, right? You're selling a service, you're selling a product, you go through procurement. How many of those dumb checklists that say, hey, are you secure enough?
I'm in CMMC nightmare with NIST.
Of course yeah. You are, right? And tell me how many of those checklists that you've had to fill out actually ask the right questions to determine whether you were secure.
Right. No, they don't. But I think this is a new one. I think the response of expecting organizations to, well, and I mean, look, this is the remote access that yeah. a lot of the sysadmins who are going to be responsible for this technology are using. So frankly, 2 days to identify, you know, 48 hours in a sprawling organization where you, one site, one location, campus, whatever, fine. You know, you've got one or two or four or six or eight clustered together somewhere.
But every agency?
Yeah. You start yeah. looking at these federal agencies that are sprawling and they don't even know where their ISP and WAN connections are terminating to. Finding them, getting somebody on site, because how are you going to do this remotely if that is your remote access in? And yeah, I mean, I know you were kind of joking when you led in with this doing something 67 times, but backing the config up, wiping the entire thing, physically removing it from the network, changing the passwords twice, then assuming everything behind that has been compromised, including any Active Directory services attached to it, responding to that accordingly, and then wake up, what, Monday and send in a report, a status report?
Nope, not going to happen.
I guess my feeling is, you know, Kevin, I totally take your point, and I think there is clearly truth to it because we've live in a world with really awful software. I guess I feel like if people were selling servers and those servers were regularly catching fire and burning down people's data centers, people wouldn't stand for it. But for some reason, we give a pass to software and particularly to security software, and I don't understand why. Like, we wouldn't tolerate this in the automotive sector, in the airline sector, in any other sector, but for some reason, security software gets a pass.
I 100% agree with that's my point is, as long as she's not saying hold individual developers liable.
Yep.
I agree. We allow software companies to do whatever they want.
Yep.
And we accept it. That's why I think that the SBOM stuff is, while interesting, unless we start really enforcing it, doomed to fail. We've built too many complex systems that nobody knows where they are. I can't tell you the number of times I'm doing a penetration test and we find a system or an application or whatever, and we find major vulnerabilities, we may find major issues with it, and then we go to the customer, because our job is not to hack things. I mean, that is how we accomplish our goal, but our goal is to provide information that our customers can use to fix themselves, right? And we go to them and we say, hey, look, we found this app, we found this thing, and oh my gosh, this is awful and evil and bad and you suck, and you know, and they're surprised. Mm-hmm. Not that their vulnerability exists, but that the app exists. The number of times, you know, forget government agencies, and you're absolutely right. Government agencies are sprawling. They have things all over the place. They rotate through contract houses multiple times. The people who deployed the systems last week don't exist anymore, right? But we go to companies and we say, hey, here's this app. There's a major vulnerability. Here's what we did. And their immediate reaction is, that's not ours. And then we're like, no. It is. It's yours. And then we dig into it with them and they find out, yeah, they've been running, you know, some lady in accounting, you know, read the book PHP in 37 seconds and is now an enterprise architect and building systems without telling anybody. And they're mission critical, right? You know, How many major systems have you seen started as a spreadsheet on Bob's desk, and then somebody realized it worked, or Fox Pro or whatever different system you want to talk about right now? And then they become mission critical and nobody remembers where they came from and nobody remembers what they are. And security says to us, okay, do a pen test, and we compromise it and get data. And, oh, I don't know what that is. That's yours. Sorry.
So let's pivot a little bit, because I think we could keep talking about SIS and we could keep talking about Avanti and poor software development practices all day long.
Yeah.
But from this intruder or attacker perspective, I mean, I think the way most VPNs are configured, they are not locked down to enforce least privilege. They are not segmented the way that we would hope they would be.
Yeah, they are not.
When an attacker gets in, they're probably into some good juicy stuff. Let's kind of talk about pen testing versus other assessments, because I know a lot of the listeners, pen testing gets thrown around a lot, but I'm kind of curious to share with everybody, like, what is the spectrum of testing?
One of the problems I have, and this is something I've spent years trying to fix, and I have ideas, but they're secure. We use the term penetration testing or pen testing or ethical hacking way too loosely very often. By default, by standard, by definition, a penetration test is an attack that is geared towards simulating what a real attacker would do. Uh-huh. And that means attempting exploitation and pivoting further into the systems, right? We hear all the time, like, automated pen testing. And every time I've looked at it, it's vulnerability scanning that they lie and tell you is a pen test. If the attacker, the pen tester that you've hired, is not attempting to actually exploit the vulnerabilities and pivot further, whether that's from the VPN into the network or from the app into data or whatever, if they're not attempting to do that, it's not a pen test, period. What you're talking about then is a vulnerability assessment or a security assessment, very much not a penetration test. So now that's my opinion, but of course, I mean, I believe I've done enough and written enough and built enough courses teaching other people that my opinion is pretty much become standard in this case. That sounded conceited.
If you don't say so yourself.
If I don't say so myself, don't you know who I am? I heard something, right? So it really boils down to, are you simulating what an attacker would do, right? And now there's limits to that, right? We don't destroy things. We don't break.
Right.
We don't. But if I come across and you have an authentication system, if I don't attempt to brute force accounts, if I don't attempt to bypass the authentication, if I don't attempt to pivot through that control, I haven't done a pen test.
So when you engage with a customer to do a quote unquote pen test, how do you scope that out? Do you break it down by, like, they're looking for a network test, they're looking for application, they're looking for social engineering? How do you
maybe
approach that with them?
The easiest approach we do, and this is, and we actually have an entire Knowledge Center article. My goal is to get everybody to understand how to do the right thing, right? I share everything. And so we actually document all of this stuff publicly. But for us, the way we scope is very simple. The very first question we ask is, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you trying to accomplish? What do you want to see at the end? Right. And, you know, sometimes it's, well, we have this compliance requirement, we want to check the box. Right. I hate those tests.
Right.
I mean, I'll take them because I'm a greedy capitalist. And right. Like, my goal is to be so rich I'm protested by the Occupy movement. But it hasn't happened yet. Sadly. Right. Like, the people, you know, in pup tents in my apartment parking lot seems weird. Right.
Spending all that money on Chewbacca for.
Yes, exactly. I can't make the noise. I can't do it. I have a soundboard. And so that's what we do. The first question is, what is your goal? Or do you have some app or thing that you're trying to get done? And then based on that question, we then figure out what pen testing needs to happen, what systems we should target, what goals. Like you mentioned social engineering. I believe in most cases, social engineering is a waste of money. I'll do it. You want me to call your people up and pretend to be your help desk? I'll do that. If you want me to send emails in, I'll do that. But it's a waste of money. And the reason I say it's a waste of money, there are certain examples that is required to do it. Compliance examples, contractual examples, stuff like that. But if you're just like, hey, do a pen test. And I hear this from people all the time. Well, isn't the main way people get in is by tricking somebody? And the answer is yes. So you should trick them. No. And the reason I shouldn't is twofold. One, I am going to trick them, period. I don't care what it is. I am an aware security person, right? I'm focused. I do all this kind of stuff. And I will fall for social engineering if it's done right. Right? Alyssa Miller, who is awesome and amazing and everything great. She social engineered me last year. I was at the OS conference. The election was going on. They were announcing the next day whether who won the election for the board. And when I got up in the morning, I had found out the night before that I had won. I get a text message from Alyssa. And she just says, congrats. And I wrote, thanks. Who told you? And she wrote back, you did. She had gone to Grant, the previous chairman of the board, and asked him, because what OWASP did is they notified the people who won, and then they gave us 12 hours or 20 hours or whatever to accept. And what they didn't want to do was tell people we won and then have us not accept, right? And so Alyssa social engineered me. The question is, how did I do it? What's the goal? So unless you have a very specific requirement that says you have to do social engineering, why spend money to prove that I can trick people, mm-hmm. right? Especially since you won't let me do the things that will really trick people. I can guarantee you that I can get somebody to click a link. And that's not conceited. It's not that I'm such a genius and so good at this. It's if I'm willing to be very, very mean, I can get people to click. It's very simple. I send an email saying, due to the economic downturn, we are doing layoffs. Sadly, you are one of the people that has been fired. You have 4 hours to click the link below and sign up for COBRA and continuation of your benefits and your severance package. If you don't, you're acknowledging that you don't want the severance package, and please pack up your desk. People will click that link. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's pretty sneaky. We've seen some low stuff with, you know, active shooter scenarios, fake ones being sent to people.
You're not going to let me do that. And I shouldn't do that. Let me be very clear. My scenario I just gave, the ruse I gave, if you're a pen tester and you're using that ruse, you should be set on fire.
Well, a little bit drastic, but
I'm a little bit drastic. Right. So that's how we scope it. We figure out what the goal is, and then we pick what systems help us get to that goal, right? And then we figure out what type of effort that's going to be.
Thanks for being a Packet Pushers listener. Did you know we've got other IT-related shows you might want to check out, like Heavy Wireless? Heavy Wireless is a deep dive into Wi-Fi, IoT, wireless security, and more. It's hosted by Keith Parsons. He brings decades of experience to conversations with wireless engineers, industry experts, and vendors. So whether you're a WLAN specialist already or looking to expand your skill sets, Heavy Wireless gives you the technical know-how and industry insights to succeed. Find it at packetpushers.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're engaged with a client and say they came to you, they just want to do a network test. And as you're working through it, you realize their application stack is also a mess. Does that then fall into scope, or how do you parse that out?
It's a good question. We ask.
Yes. Okay.
We'll say to the customer, hey, we're doing this network test. We found this app. The app is really bad looking from what we're able to see, right? Do you want us to pivot and change the test so we're doing this? Or do you want us to add that to the test? Or mm-hmm. how do you want to handle it? And it all depends on the client. Some clients are like, oh, yeah, we know that app. Yeah. You mean that one, right? Yeah, that's the one we mean. And then they go from there. Other customers will say, yeah, we'll do that next time. One of the things that we try to do is we try to give them enough information that they can actually go test it themselves. Because again, greedy capitalist, but I don't believe every pen test or everything tested needs to be done by a person like me, right? I would rather people know how to test their own stuff. Because bluntly, while we're not super expensive, right? Comparatively, we're right about, you know, middle of the pack with prices. I would rather you hire me and have me be able to pull off really difficult, fun tests that you're not capable of doing, you know, based on my experience, mm-hmm. rather than telling you that you have unpatched JavaScript libraries or that you didn't fix, you know what I mean? Like, if the best result you're getting from the pen test, if I'm spending a lot of time enumerating vulnerabilities that you could have found with a Nessus scan, you're not wasting your money. You're not getting the best benefit you could have gotten.
Let me back up from that a little bit, because as a, you know, I don't work in offense. I'm a defensive security architect. That is what I do. Yep. But it seems like there's a lot of stuff. I mean, I tend to push people towards doing other stuff before jumping into a pen test. Because,
as they should. Yes.
Yeah. So what does that look like? You mentioned one with like vulnerability scanning and reporting.
Yeah. Everybody should be doing vulnerability scanning and or having a company do it, right? The problem is most people are overwhelmed by vuln scans. If you just run a vuln scan, you're going to get a 2,000-page report and you're not going to know.
Oh, yeah. It's crap. Right?
Yeah, it is total crap. So you should be working either internally or externally with a group person who understands how to triage, prioritize, risk rank, and then here's the, not the 4,000 vulnerabilities, but here's the 6 things you need to do to go fix this, right? And so you can have somebody like us do that. We do that within our Scout services, or you can do it yourself. The other one that we do a lot of, that we very often will say to people, you don't need a pen test. You need a security assessment. And a security assessment is a cooperative exercise. Instead of us acting like the bad people and just attacking you, we sit down with you cooperatively, review configs, we review processes, procedures, things like that. And then we give you recommendations to help you get better so that you're prepared for that penetration test. Right. And the funny part, which always throws off people when we get into the sales pitch, which we have a salesperson, Brittany, she's awesome, but she always brings a consultant. Like, there's always a technical resource on the calls because we want to make sure things are done right. The number of times we say to a customer, yeah, we can do a pen test and that's going to be like $30,000, but really you need a security assessment and that's going to be 17, right? Or whatever. Uh-huh. They're like, wait, it's less. And it's like, you know, yeah, I know. Right. Like, well, why are you trying to sell me something that's cheaper? Well, because it's what you need. And right, like that throws people off because I guess that's not common, which it should be.
Oh, no. But I do think that's probably where most people need to be starting is with some form of assessment. And to say security assessment stirs up a lot of confusion because we have everything from assessments related to risk management frameworks and policies to the actual technical controls. And sometimes they're smooshed together. Let's ask this.
Yeah.
Whether it's assessment or getting into the actual pen test, what are common things or recurring themes that you see across different environments, protecting the names of the innocent here?
Well, when I was hacking so-and-so, God, I wish we could say that. There's so many times like, oh yeah, don't buy from them. And like there are companies I won't drive by with my credit card in my wallet. They're so bad. But if we're ever at an event and you say, hey, want to go to this restaurant? And I go, oh God, no, they're one of them. But so the most common things we see are really, in my opinion, lack of understanding what an attacker will do. Drew said earlier, you know, the defenders have to get it right every single time and the attackers only have to get it once. You know, that's not actually true, right? The attackers, one, have to get it right every time they try to do something. Defenders don't have to get it right every time. They have to get it right at the correct time. I know I'm being pedantic. I'm a jerk. But if we tell people they have to get it right every time, you know as well as I do, that's impossible. How many times have you put your phone in the refrigerator and left the milk on the counter? We screw stuff up. We make mistakes constantly, right? What we have to get people to understand is what they need to do is they need to focus on the areas that have the biggest bang for the buck. Mm-hmm. So like right off the bat, one of the most common things we see when we talk about networks is overexposing services that they don't need, right? There is no reason for me to be able to get to the administrative console of that system, device, platform, whatever, from the internet if it's maintained by people on your network. Mm-hmm. That's overexposed services. So tighten up. The other thing is we see very often is not understanding how to configure the system, the platform. We see this a lot in the cloud, mm-hmm. right? People treat the cloud as something that they can just forklift their data center from a data center into the cloud and woohoo, we're cloud first or whatever the new phrase is, right? No, sorry, you suck. Lock it down. Figure out how to configure it right.
I feel like the hardening guides we were writing, I don't do cloud, but for on-prem infrastructures and publicly facing infrastructures 20 years ago or 15 years ago or almost the same hardening guides we're writing now with.
They are. We've added the word cloud in front of it, right? Like, that's it.
You know, I think the next thing you're going to tell me is that my password should not be password. And frankly, I'm.
No. I personally believe your password should be password because nobody would guess that anymore. But, right? Like it's basic.
It's the hygiene. It's the eating your vegetables.
Yeah. Wear deodorant, bathe every day, brush your teeth after every meal. And patch your stuff, right?
But that's not sexy, Kevin. People want deception technology. And
oh, yeah, deception techniques.
Offensive countermeasures.
Yeah, or AI and machine learning, right? The easiest way to sell something is to put the letters AI in front of it. Do you know the difference between AI and machine learning?
No, go ahead.
Machine learning is written in Python and AI is written in PowerPoint. And
Wow. I want that
on a t-shirt.
I just saw a sales pitch last night at the local ISSA meeting. And I'm not sure I'm welcome back at the local ISSA meeting because I asked the sponsor a lot of questions they weren't prepared for. And I'm not going to name the sponsor and really beat up on them. I should. But it was the Jacksonville ISSA meeting last night. So if you want to check, they're public. But they kept saying things like, well, DLP. And I'm like, okay, but what do you mean? Like, mm-hmm. Well, how do you mean that? Well, DLP. Yeah, no. Using the same word or acronym a second time to answer the question doesn't work. Right? Like, how do you mean it? And they're like, in the middle of this presentation about this enterprise browser that's going to protect the world and save babies, they're like, oh, and by the way, we have an AI agent. And I raised my hand and I'm like, wait a minute. You have an AI agent to do what? Oh, we have an AI agent to answer questions for the users. Why? Well, because it's an AI agent. Oh, okay. So now I'll ask my next question. Like, did you build one? And let's be clear, we know it's an LLM, right? Like we know that. Did you build one or are you using another one? And they're like, well, you can configure it. Oh, okay. So I could point it to any LLM I want to. Like I could pick ChatGPT or Bard or whatever, right? And the guy's like, no, we have one. Okay, wait, then which one is it?
Yeah.
It turns out that it's Copilot, right? Like they've just embedded Copilot. And I said to the guy, so you don't have an AI agent. like you're a browser. You have access to every AI agent. And it's just buzzwords nowadays. It irritates the piss out of me.
So other than AI or machine learning or LLMs, do you see common tools or just configurations that are well done? And you're like, two thumbs up. Good job, buddy. Here's like low hanging fruit. You did it. You pat on the back.
Yes, and I can't talk about them. And it irritates the piss out of me because of non-disclosure agreements. We have organizations. I can talk about one of them, Vistar Credit Union. They are a local credit union here in Northeast Florida. They are my credit union. I bank there. Or do I credit union there? What's the right word? I'm not sure what to call that. But and you know why I bank there? They are a public customer of SecureIDEAS. They've done references. We've been allowed to put them on our website. And here's what they do. We're not allowed to talk about the testing we do for them. But I can say this. Every single time we test them, we find stuff wrong. We find vulnerabilities.
Sure.
And every single time we do that, they fix them. There's no pushback. They fix it. What they have done, because they fix it, and even in their vendors, right? If they're using a third-party service, they lean on the vendor or they switch vendors, right? Nice. And it's not just because, well, Kevin said. It's because they have built a program that they actually focus on what the risks are for mm-hmm. themselves. They've given up, correctly so in my opinion, we got to stop everything. And it's like, okay, here's where we have to focus. Here's where we have to take. Everybody has limited resources. I have not found an organization yet that has an unlimited budget. I'm looking. I will tell you that if I find one with an unlimited budget, I'll share because it's unlimited. And but they have limited resources. They work with third parties. Every single time they deal with something, they have to evaluate. Is this a showstopper? Is this something that we can remediate partially, whatever, and have some residual risk? Or is it something we just have to accept and move on because we don't have the time? And I'm impressed as hell at how well that they go do this. And we have lots of customers like that where we test them. We have some customers we test every year. We have other customers that are part of our professional evil testing as a service. So they're being tested constantly. And when we watch, here's what I think. If I had to be pinned down and say, how are they different from other companies? In every single case that I can think of where they've done a really good job at responding to problems and remediating them, it's no tech secret. It's no tooling that they use. It's the fact that the InfoSec team is actually part of the business. They treat themselves as a peer of everybody they work with. They're not speaking down from a level of expertise and ivory towerness that, right? They are actually going to the change meetings. They're going to the design meetings. They're going to the project management teams, and they are embedding themselves into the entire process so that when SecureIDEAS or whatever other company they're working with says, hey, baby's ugly, fix this, right? They don't have to go figure out if it's important because they already understand what the company's goal is and how that system that they're testing or we're testing for them fits into that goal. And looking at the various companies I'm thinking of right now, they all have different teams, different experiences, different tooling, different systems, different sizes. But I think across the board, it's that we are a part of this, not we're in charge of this.
That's great.
Right?
That's huge. And yeah. I mean, the culture aspect of anything related to security can be a huge part of the success of a program. And I know,
yes,
working with organizations and, full disclosure, Kevin, we've done joint projects before with clients. And
yes, we have.
The message has always been, this isn't your enemy coming in,
yep,
pointing the finger and beating you over the head and smacking all of your sysadmins and engineers and architects with the, look at the long list of you guys got wrong. It's meant to be, here's some opportunity for improvement, and we can help you prioritize that based on what we know the attackers are coming in with and their skill set and how to not be the low-hanging fruit. And, wouldn't you rather have the person in your corner finding these vulnerabilities instead of ending up on the front, the headline news the next day because somebody else found it?
What we try to always tell our customers, one, we always joke around, and it's true, but we joke about it, that we are glorified QA people. The difference between me as a penetration tester and a QA person is what I do with the bug when I find it, right? A QA person writes up a ticket, sends it to Jira, whatever. Me, I giggle and then I attack further, right? That's the only difference. And I giggle a lot. But what we always say to people is, you're not hiring us because we're geniuses that are so much better than you. We're different. We have a different viewpoint. We have a different perspective. We have a different experience. What we're saying to companies is, I think back to when I was at Blue Cross of Florida, right? I was there for 6 years, I think. Yeah, 6 years. And I was an admin and an architect and all this kind of crud, right? And I knew stuff. I understood the systems. I did a lot there. But when you work at an organization for a period of time, you get blind to variety of options you may have had, right? Because this is how we run this. This is how this is deployed. This is how this is configured. And how many times have you seen, you have a system, somebody wrote the documentation, you try to follow the documentation, it doesn't work. You go and talk to them and it's like, oh yeah, you have to do this thing. Why didn't you write that down? Oh, because everybody knows you do that thing. No, you know you do that thing, right? And so what you're getting when you hire a company like ours or another company is that we are seeing so many different systems over time that we have that viewpoint that is slightly skewed from what you are. So we're going to see that thing that you looked at every day.
And you're not coming in with assumptions.
Exactly. We just had it happen. We were doing a physical pen test up in a place, and I almost said where, damn it. And Jennifer and I went in. Jennifer is amazing at physical pen tests. She can break into anything. It's crazy. And we walked by this storage area, and every one of the things, the shelving things, were padlocked, right? And there was sensitive stuff behind those padlocks, behind those gates. And as I walked by, I noticed that not a single padlock was clasped. They were just hanging loose. And I pointed it out, hey, you realize those are unlocked, right? And the security guard, who was an actual cop, was walking us around, is like, those aren't unlocked. Oh, they are unlocked. It was like this surprise. Turned out they've been unlocked for a while. And everybody who walked by, out of the corner of your eye, you see a padlock. You don't even notice it. You don't even, it's just there.
Yeah.
And they had actually lost track of the fact that somebody at some point had unlocked all these locks, not locked them again. Yet the guards patrolling never noticed, right? Because the padlock was there.
Fresh eyes are always good.
Fresh eyes. Yes.
Okay. So earlier you mentioned, sort of the canonical example of a vulnerability scan that just dumps out lots of vulnerabilities. And what do you do with it? What, in terms of a penetration test, if I've gone through the assessment, I've realized a penetration test is what I need. This is what I've scoped it out properly. What constitutes useful output for me as the customer, the receiver of the results of that test?
I don't know. What's useful to you? And I'll explain that.
Wait. Yeah. I'm going to ask that question in a slightly different way.
Good. I like it.
Okay. Same question.
Yeah.
Because a lot of organizations, and we've all seen this, end up with a pen test that they paid $50,000 for that is just an output of a vulnerability scan, and it's usually open source and didn't cost a damn thing.
So they got ripped off.
What are they looking for?
So right off the bat, there's a very simple answer. Was the pen test done by Securitas? If it was, it was great. If it wasn't, it sucked.
All right, we'll allow that, but carry on, yes.
And by the way, if you want, we have a list on our website of the 7 companies we recommend that are not us. But here's what I think people should look at. Right off the bat, I would be leery of any pen test firm that does not tell you who their pen testers are.
Like you could go and look them up and you know, check their LinkedIn profile, their web trail, et cetera. Yeah.
Yes, okay. And you should, mm-hmm. Right? And notice I didn't say the pen tester doing your test. Because when you come to Securitas and say, I want a pen test, I need it done sometime in March, whatever. I don't know who's going to do your pen test. Mm-hmm. I know the group that's going to do your pen test because we don't subcontract, right? Every one of our pen testers is an employee and I know who they are. So I know it's one of us, right? And you can ask. Matter of fact, for us, we're going to assign pen testers to your test and tell you who they are. And you can then come back and say, ooh, could I have that person instead? Right? Because I've researched them and I think they're better. You can do that with us. So the first thing I would look for is, do you know who the resources are, right? Can you look them up? Have they done stuff that's public? Have they proven their expertise? Okay.
I'm going to jump on that while you're on the first bullet, because one of my business partners, and the one thing I tell everybody is I'm very picky about pen testers.
Yes. Yes.
And one of my business partners came and they wanted to place some pen test group with a client that I was kind of helping them with. And I looked up and I couldn't find any information about anything. And it was very hush hush. And I went back and I said, well, I don't see who is on this team. Who are they?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, because they do such high profile stuff, they don't share any of their team members. And I said, I mean, I know a lot of pen testers who do things, including for the federal government. I know who all of them are and I know their credentials, and you know, maybe they can't talk about what they do. But
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let me get this right. Their stuff is so high profile that they can't be high profile.
So that's red flag number one. If they're not going to share anything with you, it's probably not because they're super secret squirrel cloak and dagger. They probably really don't have the right resources.
I apologize. I didn't know where that was going. That would surprise me. They're so high profile, we can't tell you their names. Oh my gosh. That's why we don't tell people who the president of the United States is. Because they're so high profile, we can't name them.
Okay. So number one is, are they transparent about the team?
And by the way, they should be transparent about everything they do, right? Ask them what tools they use. Be specific. One of the things I like to see people ask is, okay, here's what we hear a lot of. Let me be clear. I do expert witness work. And as part of my expert witness work, I look at a lot of pen test reports from other companies for a variety of reasons. We also do advisory work where a company will bring us in. We're their security champion, helper, whatever you want to call it. And then they'll be working with a vendor that the vendor gives them a pen test report from what they did, and they'll bring it to us to review. We talk to people all the time. And the one thing we hear a lot is, well, we use a lot of custom tooling that we've built. Okay, great. That's a good answer. Potentially, right? But here's the trick. Ask the follow-up question. How many of those tools have been released publicly? And if their answer is none, because that's our secret sauce, don't talk any further to them. There is no secret sauce to pen testing. If you are depending on your trade secrets to do a pen test right, then you suck. This entire field is built around community and helping and working together. And here's what I find. In every case where I've been able to dig further past that, we use a lot of custom stuff, but we can't release it. We can't show it. We can't explain it. We can't demo it. We can't do any of that. What they mean is they use a version of Nessus that they've changed the logo on the report. And that's their custom tool, right? So push further. Your pen test firm, let's be clear. You are about to hire this company. Ask them to expose to you and hopefully nobody else every bit of your dirty laundry. They are going to go and find and potentially compromise the most sensitive stuff at your organization. So one of the biggest goals you have of sussing them out and fleshing out the relationship is whether you can trust them. Uh-huh. And if their entire start of the relationship is, if I tell you, I'd have to kill you.
Not a good relationship.
They're full of it.
It's like a bad game of strip poker where you're standing there naked and somebody else has taken all of your chips and your clothes and they're just pointing and laughing at you.
I've never played strip poker, which I think is good because this body should never be shown to anybody. I'm funny looking, but I think you're right. That's why we say to people, like companies will call us and they'll say, can you show us pen test report? Yes, we can. We have an unredacted pen test report that we give people. And it's unredacted because we want to show them the actual stuff they're getting, not black bars and red outlines and stuff like that, right? And when customers say to us, okay, what tools are you using? We give them a list of the tools we could use, because of course it depends on what system we're touching and what we find and everything else like that. And we give them a list of the tools that we've written for pen testing that we've released, right? And they can go vet it. They can look at every single thing we do. That is the second thing, is transparency, right? I want to see transparency. The other thing that you want to look for is that they actually explain why their people are able to give you the recommendations to fix the problems. And I'll pick on Secure Ideas here because I'm biased and I like us, but I also know us, right? Every single one of our senior consultants has at least a decade of experience as an IT person, either as a developer or as an admin. They have built the systems, run the systems they're now testing. Mm-hmm. So when we give a recommendation, and I want to be clear, I'm not the only company that does this. Red Siege with Tim Medine, you know, In Guardians with Mike and Jay, they do the same thing, is that their staff aren't just, I went to college, got a cybersecurity degree, and now I'm a pen tester. And I'm not making fun of those people, I'm just saying. So when we give a recommendation that says, hey, we found this problem with Active Directory in your network, and here's how we recommend that you fix it, that's based on actually having done that recommendation at another enterprise, because that's what we used to do. That's the other part of this, is you don't want to just vet what the pen tester can do as a pen tester, but you want to vet that they're capable of understanding the systems they're testing and can give good recommendations. Those are the three things I would look for. And if you get those three things, then it's just a matter of, can you build a good relationship with that company? The relationship is important.
I think a good one to maybe wrap up with here is, you talked about the transparency, the tools used, and you know, you, your team, and your work in the community has really transcended the company. So much of the stuff that you've built is released. So what are some of those open source community effort programs that we could leave the listeners with to go check out?
Well, Samurai WTF is the one that many people know. It means Web Training Framework, honest.
Sure, it does.
Yeah. Samurai WTF is an environment with web app testing tools and targets to practice with, and a full 6-day web pen testing course that's been open sourced on teaching you how. Because the goal is to give people tooling that they can learn how to do what we do without hurting themselves or other people. That's a big one.
Sorry, I got the WTF part. What was the first part of it?
Samurai.
Okay.
Yep. We also have things like, I'm actually about to release a new tool called Broker, B-R-O-K-K-R. It's not out yet. Matter of fact, it's not complete yet, but it's going to be a platform to build web exploits. Again, to help people test their own stuff. You can also go to our professionallyevil.com website. That's our slogan, is professionally evil, because we think it's funny. Other people seem to as well, so it works. And we have links to a lot of our open source projects. Like you said, I'm part of the OWASP. I'm a project lead. I was a chapter lead, and now I'm a board member. It is nuts how much stuff we release. Jason is regularly releasing stuff. Our team is encouraged to release stuff every day. We have a whole bunch of stuff around B checks with Burp that are available. Most of our stuff is geared toward helping you understand the risks of your systems and to test them yourself.
Fantastic. I think that's a great list of resources, and we'll put the links in the show notes here.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, Kevin, thank you so much for being here. This was really a great discussion. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, JJ, another show in the can. Thanks to our listeners for joining us. Just a reminder, you connect with JJ and me directly via the Slack channel. We operate at packetpushers.net. It's free to sign up, and you can tap into a vibrant community of infrastructure and security professionals, or just come for the memes and check it out at packetpushers.net/Slack. And as always, thanks for listening.